This is a Deese World production in association with Pants Pending Studios.
Hey everyone, it's Deese here to tell you about a brand new show coming Wednesday, November 3rd called Some Imperfections, the SIP podcast, Some Imperfections podcast, hosted by life coaches Abby Buckenberger, Sierra Cossey, and myself. We are coming together to bring you a brand new show. It's going to be every other Wednesday starting November 3rd. You can find it on Deese Comedy and IamAlliance.me. The show combines Abby and Sierra, who are certified life coaches, helping you every day, bringing you a fuller experience to your life, helping you with all your world's problems. And I will be sitting on the side doing my usual slang and dick jokes. It's going to be a good time. It's going to be a great combination. We've solving all the world's problems. Everything you need to know. I have great advice, guys. I just don't listen to myself. That's my problem. But we're going to be combining all of our knowledge, their genuine skills, my practical, ridiculous knowledge of getting myself into horrible situations and figuring out how to get out of it. And we will be answering your questions. We've got, you can email us. You can find us on Instagram at some.imperfections, on Facebook at some.imperfections. And you can message us, find us on Waze, Yelp, Yellow Pages, White Pages, any of the pages. Look us up, find us, send us your questions, your topics, things you want to talk about. We'll answer them anonymously if you want. Just let us know. We'll have links and all the upcoming information for you to let us know what you want us to talk about. So check that out, guys, tomorrow on Deese Comedy, The Social Hour, everywhere you find podcasts, and also at IamAlliance.me. And again, that is every other Wednesday from The Social Hour and I Am Alliance.
You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
You've been stuck in the house keeping me at gunpoint for the last 2 weeks. It's time for sunshine.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Deese World Studios in Spokane, Washington, this is the social hour. On today's show, comedian Andrea Entz. And now your host. With COVID cases on the rise in America again, he's starting to think Mexico may pay for that wall after all. Deese Casillas!
Mall of Keen, everyone, welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Deese. Thank you for coming around for another episode of the show. We got a great one planned. My friend, comedian, actor, and more, Andrea Entz, is going to be on the show. We're going to talk to her in just a moment. We have a lot to talk about, a lot to catch up with her. She is hilarious, and I can't wait to chat with her. But before we get into that, guys, as you know, we have a new show, Some Imperfections Podcast, Take a Little Sip, with myself, Abby Buckenberger, and Sierra Cossey of I Am. Check them out at IamAlliance.me. They are life coaches. I'm a comedian. We have a new show. It's called Some Imperfections. New episode will be out tomorrow, Wednesday the 18th. We have a new episode every other Wednesday. We give you life advice. They are certified life coaches. They know what they're talking about. I did drugs and made a lot of mistakes and sometimes know what I'm talking about. It's a good dynamic. We have a lot of fun. This episode is going to be a good one that you hear tomorrow. So check that out. Also, very important, we have a new Patreon page, Patreon.com/Deese Comedy. Check it out. We've got some great specials on there, some exclusives just for you guys, our patrons. I've got a new podcast, The Social Hour Morning Paper. 7-day-a-week podcast just for our patrons. If you subscribe, you can get to to spend your mornings with me because you need more of me, especially in the morning when I'm not awake and cranky. I'm just drinking my coffee and going through the news and my jokes and seeing what's happening for the day. So that can be an exclusive you can be a part of. So check that out, guys. You can donate, subscribe, go to Deese Comedy, Patreon.com/Deese Comedy, and subscribe. Get your exclusive behind-the-scenes bonus content. Also, the Social Minute every Monday. Thanks for supporting that, guys, as well as all the other shows across the network on Pants Pending. Check those out, too. Also next week, the 20th, I'll be in Lewiston at Shooters, and the 21st, I'll be in Big Fork, Montana at Flathead Lake Brewing Company. So check out those shows, both of them with Luke Severide, and some other great comics. So be sure to come out to those, guys. All right, that's it. That's all the commercials. That's all I'm going to talk about. We're getting into the show. Please welcome my friend, Andrea Entz.
Yay.
So, Andrea, I'm here, guys. Andrea Entz, comedian, actress, actor. Actor or actress?
Actor.
Actor, thank you. Yeah. After I said it, I'm like, no, that's not right.
I accept either, but actor.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, I do like that better. It seems like I don't understand the differentiation.
Well, it's like comedian or comedian.
Yeah, that one I never got either. being a comedian and not an actor, I do take some umbrage with that one. Not in the way against differentiating. I've actually yelled at a guy one time at a mic because he was hosting the mic, and every time a female comic came up, he's like, "This lady comic and this," and I'm like,
God.
By the time I got up there, or he's like, "This little darling," I'm like, "Dude, stop."
Did you say it?
Yeah, I did. I yelled at him when I got up there. I spent most of my set just yelling at him and kind of dressing down.
Oh my god! Like, and was the audience like,
"Yay"? Yeah, because especially the comics, and a lot of the comics that were women there. It's like, dude, what are you doing? Like, why are you stop the differentiation of like breaking down what they're just we're all comedians here. This is just
for sure.
What we're doing.
I've been introduced many times about how they're like, she looks really sweet, but you won't believe what comes out of her mouth. I'm like, oh, great.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's thank you. Why that? I want to do a show where I introduce men that way, only the male comics that way.
Wait, but also like he looks really sweet or like really derogatory.
Or probably just be like, he looks like a frat boy, and he still says the same dumb shit a frat boy would say. Coming to the stage now.
Well, he plays D&D in his free time. It's that's great. I don't know. I even outside of the gendered announcements, the gendered God, what do you even call that? Introductions.
Yeah.
Any type of giving away of the type of person that they are irritates me, because especially at the open mic level, if I'm going to try something different and you've introduced me as really high energy and I'm trying to be like really sarcastic this time, now you've ruined it. And I can't.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, they're already telling the audience what you are. And it's like, as a comic, you may have a style or something, you know, that there's traits that come out regularly, but also, you know, the misdirection and, like you said, trying new things is such a part of it.
Yeah, or like sometimes if they say she's really funny, I'll go, "Oh no, don't tell them that, cuz now they expect I'm going to be funny."
Yeah. Yeah. I used to, when I would travel, just to hit open mics, or if I was on the road and I'd end up at a mic where I didn't know anyone, I'd always tell the host that it was my first time.
Yes.
So then they'd be like, "Oh, it's his first time going up." And then if you do well, like you know, if you kill it, they're like, "Man, this guy's got something."
Yeah, I like to think that audiences are on the comic side, like from the top of the show, and then like slowly they either make a decision about a comic when they see them.
Yeah.
Or as the show goes on and all the comics were terrible, they're like, "I'm ready to hate this person." But if you say the person is their first time, I feel like they're usually ready to root for you.
Yeah.
But if I'm hosting, I do not introduce. If they tell me it's their first time, I'm like, I'm not saying that because they're going to be ready for you to fall on your face and you're already nervous. Like, just go up and do it.
Yeah. Well, in first time up, I mean, I'm sure you remember your first time going up, but you're almost too dumb to fail your first time going up. Like, you don't even know how to do it poorly. You just don't know anything. And it's like serendipity almost.
Yeah. I was like, wow, one person looked at me. This went really well. No, I do remember my first time up, and my friends had told me I was really funny, and I was in college. There's always the stand-up opportunities at whatever coffee shop. And I was like, I'd been sitting on these jokes for a long time, and I had told my friends a bunch, and I only used the jokes that I knew would go well because I was so nervous about it not going well. And then so for the first, and it did, it went well. As far as I knew at the time.
Right. Yeah. Compare, you know, relatively speaking.
Right. And then I just did those jokes for a long time because I just was too nervous to try anything that might not work.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. And, you know, when you are new, you get that buzz of like, okay, this worked, so I guess I just do this. But, you know, at a certain point, if you're pursuing it, or really working, you kind of have to be like, you know, I tell comics all the time, like, dude, if you're not bombing open mics, like, you're not trying new things. You're just not, you're not taking chances, you know, and you're not actually growing.
Yeah, that's totally true. I tell people, like, if I invite them to a mic, which I don't do all the time, but if people are constantly like, we want to see you, I'm like, well, okay, here's a mic. I will tell them, expect people watching, be grateful if it's a good show or if there's a good comic.
because there's
people who are funny who are trying new things.
Yeah.
And there's people who aren't funny who are trying a new thing, which is comedy. Yeah. I was getting a Brazilian the other day, which I, you know, was questionable with COVID, but I figured my puss was not going to give her COVID. But
I don't know how it's spread. Okay. I don't know.
That's what she said. She was like, we don't know a lot about this disease, you know? She was telling me a story. She was from LA.
Yeah.
She had a friend who was doing comedy, and he finally got booked in Las Vegas.
Okay.
And I think he was opening for somebody like 15 or 30 minutes. And then 9/11 happened. And it was the weekend. His show was the weekend after 9/11.
Oh, man.
And he was like, oh, I'm so nervous. Like, it's going to be really bad, but I still have to do it. I signed the contract. Will you come? So she and her friends drove over to Vegas and watched. And she said it was like the longest 30 minutes of her life. Because she was like, he was fine. It's just the audience did not want to laugh.
Right.
And then he never did comedy again. He just was like, it was too bad of a bomb.
Oh,
I can never do it again. And I was like, you know what? That's probably the right decision. Because if you can't handle that bomb.
Right. Yeah.
Then it's not for you.
They're not.
That's
all
95% of what you're going to be doing.
Well, especially when you're working your way up, you know, at a certain point, like I got resilient because I did so many shitty, like, not even open mics, but just when I was doing shows, like bar shows, like these shitty bar shows in tiny towns and traveling all over. And like, you get, it's like, yeah, there's good ones and there's real bad ones. I mean, I did a show. It actually wasn't that long ago. We a couple years ago, I don't think you ever met Michael, the guy I was touring with for a while, though. We did a show and we were on the road for a couple weeks, and we did this one tour and one show in Livingston, Montana, tiny little town. And it was my favorite show on the tour. It was one of the last shows we did of like a 3-week run. And the next year we went back to that same place, and it was the worst show I've ever done. I did 40 minutes, and I don't think anyone even listened to a word I said the entire time. And like, it got to the point where I'm like, after the first 15 minutes, I'm like, I'm not getting anything. So I literally just turned my head. They had NBA, there was the NBA playoff game on TV. And I just watched the game while robotically on autopilot, like going through my set. Just I'm like, I'll do my time. But like, and afterwards, like, whatever. I mean, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm not like, the next show will be fine, you know?
Right. Right. That's... Even though it totally is uncomfortable and you totally do have thoughts of, am I even good enough? This yeah. is terrible. That was so uncomfortable. Like, there is nothing more uncomfortable that I've ever experienced than exactly what you're describing. And for the audience, it can be uncomfortable too. But yeah. like, I don't know. That's one thing that I've been thinking about with Zoom comedy is mm-hmm. like, you really, even now more than ever, an attentive audience makes such a difference. Like, there is a difference between,
oh yeah,
you know, what you're describing, where the audience doesn't care about the what's happening. They're not there. They're not on your side. And, you know, having exactly the opposite. There's in Bellingham, mm-hmm. there's the bars that you do your mics at. And those ones, you know, it's drunk people maybe didn't even know there was going to be a comedy show.
Yeah.
You're fighting against them. And then there's an improv theater where people are buying tickets to laugh. And that is always the best audience.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, there is a difference, you know, and that's one of the things that I learned too is, and I think, you know, it's important for people to realize, like, a free show is great because there's no barrier to entry, but that also means there's no barrier to entry, which means the audience has zero stakes in the game. Like,
yeah.
if, you know, they can not laugh, they can not care, but if they buy a ticket, they're like invested, they're like in liking this event, you know?
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. I always, when people are like, oh, I did really well at XYZ Theater, I'm like, I'm sure you did.
Yeah. yeah.
That's what it's set up for.
Right.
Not to say that I'm constantly like, everybody sucks. I'm just like, oh, I think I have a memory of an old white man at the bar that everybody does their comedy at in Bellingham coming up and being like, well, but I did really well at the theater. And I
yeah.
was like, yeah, you did. And I don't know. Have you had that experience doing comedy for a long time? Like, newcomers coming up to you and being really cocky and then just being surprised that they didn't do well?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't remember if you, when you were here, if you hit the comedy club, did you actually do the Spokane?
I did.
You did. Okay. I thought so. That's like the cheat code in the area. Cause like, again, like it's exactly what you're describing. It's a place where it's only comedy. Like, there's not anything else there but comedy. And
yeah.
then there's a bunch of bar shows and bar mics. And there's people who just do the comedy club, and that's fine. You should do the comedy club, but I'm like, that's almost like cheating. Like, go yeah. do one of these other, like, my favorite open mic we had in town. It just closed, you know, right before COVID hit, it closed, but it was a Friday nights in the back room bar area of a Chinese restaurant. And it was, I mean, in a rough part of town, and the audience did not care. It was in like, it was my favorite mic to hit though, because if you could get up there and A, get their attention, and B, make them laugh, you're like, I'm fucking killing it right now. Like, I'm on my game. But if you know, I mean, it's hard. You got, they're doing, I mean, there's pool, it's a small room, and there's three pool tables, and everyone's, you know, high, and they're getting drunk, and there's TVs going. And you're like, yeah, I got to get over all that, make them listen, and then make them laugh. And like, that was my favorite mic to do. And yeah, you'd see people go up there and just eat shit, and you're like, yeah, dude, this is the battleground right here.
and it's like, that's why I like when the comedy community forms, like, and you go to mics like that and you're all just like, that one sucked the worst, great job.
Yeah, you gotta do that though. I mean, it's what makes you better. Like you said, you got to get through that. If you like your friend that went to, or the guy you knew went to Vegas and never did it again, it's like, if you can't handle that, they're not all going to be good, man. That's for sure.
Yeah. To be fair, it was 9/11.
Yeah. I mean, that is a little different. But I, you know, there's kind of a path for all of it, no matter what's going on, I think. And
there's always going to be something, some reason that the audience isn't there for you.
Right. Yeah. And Vegas is tough too, because it's a transient audience that is like, they probably got, you know, again, a lot of those clubs are like, I get free tickets, or, you know, or you get a free dinner if you come to this show or something. So it's a really, Vegas can be a tough audience anyway. But
Yeah. Have you done Vegas?
I've done mics and stuff in Vegas. I've never done booked gigs down there yet. But yeah, I mean, it's I know it's can be very challenging.
Well, and I can imagine doing a mic down there. I mean, do you even get like a big audience, or is it just like what you're describing where it's a restaurant and they just happen to be seeing a comedy show? Like you just happen to be there because, you know, it's like New York and Vegas. Why would I go see an open mic when I can go see Cirque du Soleil?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. There's so much more to do. And it's, you know, there's I mean, it's just people dedicated to crafting their, you know, their art, not people who are actually watching. I mean, there's very few places, especially the larger cities you get, where a mic is like a form of entertainment for anyone. You know,
that's fair.
You know, it's like the in smaller towns, like, yeah, like I do a lot of stuff in Missoula, Montana.
Okay.
It's a small town. And I mean, relatively speaking for Montana, I think it's the third largest. But and like open mics are like kind of like a show, you know, because they happen once a month and it's like a thing. And like these people come out and do comedy. It's like, yeah, this is not really entertainment. If you go up a little bit in as far as like scale of cities, people would just, you know.
Yeah, definitely. My hometown started an open mic. I'm from a really small town. Do you know Enumclaw?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm not from Enumclaw. I'm from a town next to it that's even smaller. Does not have a Starbucks. That is my.
That's
that
how
is
small
how I tell people.
It doesn't even have a Safeway. Safeway's got Starbucks in them.
Nope, no Safeway.
Damn.
You have to go to Enumclaw or the town next to it.
Oh, wow.
Very small. And Enumclaw started having, I think it's even a book show, like once a month type situation.
Okay.
And some of my Seattle friends I've made are like going and doing, and I'm too afraid. I do not want to go to my hometown and do the stuff that I have curated in Seattle.
Yeah. Oh, sure. It's different. Well, I've been, is it that brewery? Is it at a brewery down there in Enumclaw that, what's the name of that street? Rock Street, Paper Street.
I couldn't tell you.
I played a show at that brewery.
You did?
Well, a brewery in Enumclaw, and we booked a show on our tour, but they do a regular monthly show also. So maybe that it's probably the same one. I doubt they have multiple shows running in Enumclaw.
No. Unless it's at the church. Yeah. You know,
which
they have more churches than Starbucks.
They have more. Yeah, I don't doubt that at all.
But it's like I have so many friends from back home that like they see me on Facebook posting about shows and they want to see my comedy, and I'm like, well, first of all, anybody from a small town, they see me do an open mic and they think that it's hot shit, you know? And it's not. It's just an open mic, and so I don't want them. They don't, and they also don't know that I'm talking about being an atheist bisexual in Seattle.
Right.
Like I don't want to go. You don't need to know that about me.
Yeah,
even
you're gonna.
I put it publicly on YouTube.
Yeah, you're gonna hear a whole. Well, they don't get YouTube. They don't have Starbucks. No. They don't have YouTube.
No. No, I actually, and I said this on my podcast, but I'm a nanny,
mm-hmm.
and like the first few months, I get really shy because I'm like observing what the social rules are, right? In any work situation, but especially when you're in someone's home.
Sure. Yeah, it's a little more intimate. It seems a little.
It is totally delicate. More intimate. Yes. So I'm like, okay, what jokes can I make? What can I not say? And then several months later, they told me, it like came out that they had watched my comedy.
Oh, man.
So they knew the whole time that I was garbage. And I was like trying to be so professional.
Right.
It was, oh my God. I'm like, you trust me with your child?
that says a lot. God. That means they liked it, or at least it was, you know, they found it genuine.
She said, you know, some of it was funny.
It sounds like you're talking to your aunt at Thanksgiving. They're trying to be supportive. They're like, oh, yeah, some of it was, you know, it's not my thing, but I get how people would.
Exactly. It was exactly that. And it was some dumb, you know, the only reason I put the clips on YouTube is because bookers want to see a clip.
Right.
And it was like something from several years ago that was not good.
Yeah.
It was 2 minutes. I was so embarrassed that they told me. I'm like, this whole time I've been walking around like I'm a professional and you're knowing that I lick my boyfriend's butthole. Oh, my God. And they were like, well, you're an adult and we know you're not going to tell those jokes to our kid. And
yeah,
actually, they're pretty cool about him knowing about real life, but not so far as to
not
talk
that
about
not the butthole licking. Yeah.
Yeah.
One day. The exactly. In case you don't know, I learned this a while back. What you do is you just put that YouTube clip to unlisted, and then you can send the booker the link. If they have the link, they can look it up, but it's not actually public on your page.
Okay, I know about unlisted. There were a couple that were like specifically said, "Do not put it as unlisted. We need to be able to." And so then I just stopped doing it as unlisted. But
so,
you know what?
Yeah.
I'm gonna go back and do that because nobody needs those clips anymore.
Yeah, that's what I do for. Yeah, then you send them the link, and then they can. Once they have the link, they can do it. But otherwise, you don't need to scroll through your whole Facebook page or YouTube and whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah, I've not been doing comedy as long as you have. I got booked for my first festival.
Oh, nice.
Right at the beginning of the pandemic.
Oh, I mean, congratulations. That's great. But like, what was the festival?
It was, and that was the other thing, is anybody and their mom can make a nice flyer, you know, to make it look like it's this big professional thing. And that's really what it was. After I didn't go and I followed the person who made it, it was in New York. It was in the Bronx.
That's great.
And it was
going
to be great. Just going to New York, meeting New York comics and
absolutely.
Like exposing myself. That was my goal, was just go. And I have a woman in New York who I'm friends with from theater, who's like an established theater creator, and she lives in New York. So I was going to go stay with her. It was all. And then the freaking pandemic happened. Oh. I was pissed.
When was this supposed to be?
It was actually, it was going to be on my birthday, April 4th.
Oh, damn. Any chance of it being rescheduled, or is it just kind of who knows? I guess New York. Well, New York's kind of opening back up, but.
Yeah, they talked about, like, when it first happened, they were like, we will be rescheduling, but I don't have any, I'm not holding out hope.
Yeah. Well, hopefully. I mean, that's good. That's such a smart move, though, that whole, I mean, it's the networking and doing it. Like, even if it costs you money, you kind of have to front load. I mean, that's what I tell people all the time about comedy. It's such a weird, it's not as easy of an A to B paycheck. Like, are hitting open mics, and then you're like just doing it for free, and then you're driving 5 hours to maybe make $25 and sleep in your car to do 10 minutes at a show or something like that. You know, like that's
but now somebody there knows who you are, and they're going to book you in a year at a something for $150.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Then that's the part of it. You kind of have to believe in it and really grind enough, and then it pays off. But
so are you only doing comedy?
Yeah.
Is that your gig?
Yeah, that's been full-time comedy for a couple of years now. So
that's amazing. Congratulations.
Well, I'm unemployed right now because comedy doesn't exist. I've got a couple shows a month I still do, and obviously a bunch of online stuff. But yeah, it's been wild. I mean, I was doing probably 25 plus shows a month to, I mean, I think last month I did 4, and this month I'm doing 2.
When did you start?
In some form or fashion, it's been about 15 years.
Okay.
Yeah, because I started doing stand-up when I lived in L.A., and I was doing improv, and then writing was my main thing, and I wrote a book that I published and was doing that, and then I was trying to pursue writing more, and that was kind of what I was focused on for a while. And then the only writing gigs I could find that were paying were comedy. So I'm like, oh, well, I can, you know, I did comedy. So I'm like, I wasn't doing stand-up consistently, but I started doing comedy writing and getting paid for that. And then eventually, like, that led me back doing comedy more. And
are you from L.A.?
Yes.
And then you came to Spokane.
I did.
I know we talked about this when I met you
initially
in Spokane.
Yeah.
Why? Spokane.
Well, so funny story. I didn't plan to move to Spokane. I didn't like pack up my stuff and say like, I'm moving to Spokane.
Not many people do.
Yeah. You just kind of get, you know, most people just end up in jail here. And So I left California in 08 when the economy crashed really bad, and I was just done with LA. I needed to be out of California. It was too expensive. There were no jobs. And I lived in the Northwest for a little while in my mid-teens. So I knew the area. I'd been to Spokane, played Hoop Fest and stuff like that. And so I'd been in the Northwest. And I went to Montana, where I have friends and family, and I spent a couple months there just kind of hanging out. And I was actually on my way driving to Portland, where a buddy of mine I grew up with in LA was living. I was going to stay in Portland, and that was my plan. I stopped in Spokane for what was going to be a weekend just to hang out kind of halfway. I'm like, I'll stop in Spokane, spend the weekend there, just party, hang out. And I didn't know anyone here. And I, 10 years later, I'm still here. So
you just stayed.
I stayed. Yeah, actually. So I met a guy at a bar Saturday night. Like, I came in like probably on a Thursday, and I was going to stay and like leave Monday morning was my plan. I was just going to stay a couple nights. And Saturday night, I was out at a bar. I met these guys. Well, I met these guys who were sitting in a bar drinking a shot of tequila, and back when I was still drinking. And these guys were sitting next to me, and they're like, "What are you drinking?" I'm like, "Oh, you know, tequila." And like, "Oh, cool, cool." I'm like, "Well, how are you guys doing?" Like, "Oh, good. We're celebrating his birthday." I'm like, "Oh, let me buy you shots." So I buy him shots, and then we start talking. We hang out. They take me to another bar, and I meet this guy who would become my business partner for a couple of years, first 2 years I lived here. He was, I used to do marketing and business development. I had my own consulting firm for a while when I lived in California. So
wow, you've just done it all.
I've been around. I've done a lot of things in my days. So I had that experience, and he was like, "Oh, I'm looking for a guy with your experience. Are you in Spokane?" I'm like, "Well, I'm leaving this, you know, Monday." And he convinced me to stay and take a meeting with his client Monday morning and at least, you know, talk to them. So I did. We were offered a contract to do this job, and that was going to be a couple months. So I found a place to live. I forced the guy who rented the house to do an 8-month lease, not a 12-month lease. And then after 8 months, I ended up living there for 4 more years, month to month.
Oh my God.
The contract kept extending and doing more things. And we started working on more projects. And then Spokane just kind of became home. And now it's just where I live.
What are you consulting? Is it like business consulting, like where they should invest their money, et cetera?
I did a lot of advertising stuff. So I'd a lot of new companies who were kind of figuring out where to put their advertising dollars, building sales teams, kind of taking their business, their new ideas to market and kind of pushing them out there. I can build websites and do all that stuff.
Which is helpful for you now as a comedian.
What's that?
That's helpful for you now as a comedian.
It is nice, yeah, to be able to do all that on my own instead of having to farm it out. I still do some of the harder stuff I'll farm out if I'm like, I don't have the time. Well, now I have the time. I've consulted and worked with a million different types of clients. I very unique situations depending on what their needs are. So
do you ever do stuff like that now, like for other comics or anything?
No.
Now that you have time.
I don't love doing website stuff, and I think I'll do mine, and that's about it. I stopped doing consulting stuff altogether a couple years ago and just basically would say no to anything. More recently, I've taken a couple gigs if the gig is right and the money's right, and like, you know, I'm like, all right, that's fun enough. Running a media company that was popping up in Spokane here for a while, working with them.
You're basically like freelancing, doing your thing, consulting and comedy and podcasting. And you wrote a book.
I do photography too that I sell.
Photography!
Not to brag.
Did you ever think that that's what you would do? Or is this all just stuff that has accidentally added itself to your life?
I thought I'd be dead by now for sure. 100%.
Back when I was drinking.
Yeah. no kidding. So I always knew I wanted to be a writer. Writing from the time I could put pen to paper, writing was my thing. And I was always you know, funny and liked comedy. When I was younger, though, I had no clue how, like, what a career and how comedy, like, how you became a stand-up comic. Like, no clue.
Yeah.
So there was no way to pursue that. But I could write, and I did that and worked on that. And then, you know, eventually comedy, I was like...
And did you go to school?
No. Andrea, I didn't go. I dropped out of school in the middle of eighth grade.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I never...
You're consulting people on their businesses.
Yeah, I never spent a day in high school. Like, not one day. And
that's amazing.
Yeah, I was a junior high school dropout. I dropped out of school and moved out of my parents' house when I was 16. And, like, just did my own thing. And
so are you going to write a memoir one day?
Oh, boy. I've started a lot of times. And... I mean the books I write kind of are
okay.
They're just, you know, in metaphors, you know. That's
isn't that always how it is? Do you read, especially, God, okay, you know what, I'm 24 and I always still have to ask myself which one is fiction and nonfiction.
Fiction is the fake one.
And you know what I have to do? I have to remember the title, the Stranger Than Fiction movie. Have to remember that. Why did they do that? Not real and real, but it's nonfiction is the real one.
Yeah.
Non should have been with not real.
Because literary snobs just want to make you think more. They want to make it harder than it has to be.
To know that I am not worthy. And if I can't figure that out, I shouldn't be reading.
Right. Yeah. They're like, this is the barrier to entry. Knowing what fiction or not. If you can't figure that out, get out of here.
What was my point? When you read fiction.
Yes.
Do you not always kind of think like, oh man, I wonder what this author's childhood was like? Because like John Grisham always has like the same types of themes. You're like, oh man, you definitely went through the ringer.
Right. Yeah. I mean, everything's about like how many courts, how many times have you been sued, John Grisham?
Exactly.
Like, how much do you hate lawyers? What did a lawyer do to you as a kid that you...
Yeah, exactly. Or like, I don't know. I can definitely tell if somebody, like, if they can write about a specific type of trauma, I'm like, you went through that trauma and you're not telling us, and this is your therapy.
Right.
So I psychoanalyze as I'm reading a book. I'm like, whoa.
Well, that's the psychologist in you, right? You just are.
Exactly.
Like, but I know I like that. That's 100% true. I've always said one of my, and I don't know if this is I don't want to dash Dees Casillas under this quote, but this is something I say a lot, that, you know, every work of fiction is based on a true story. You know, I mean, it's like there is and that's the same with comedy, you know, even a joke, like every joke. It's either like 1% or 99%, and then the rest is kind of fill in the blank, fib a little.
As much as you try not to base it off of real life, it totally is. I've never licked my boyfriend's butthole, though. That one is...
Come on.
Not true.
Yeah, you already said it on YouTube. You can say it here. It's okay. You know, your employers who you nanny for are not listening to this podcast. Don't worry.
They might Google me again. But that's the thing that I love about comedy is that people will watch it and they don't know if I'm telling the truth or not.
Yeah.
So if they try to talk to me about it after, I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Who said that?
Exactly.
Only me and my boyfriend know.
Yeah, only anyone, whoever was holding the camera. That's all the only people who know on that one.
So are the books you write fiction?
Yes. Well, all but one that I wrote. I wrote one
which was on consulting.
No, this was actually it was just on a fiction book on consulting. It's just how to do it poorly. That way, they'd still hire me.
Yeah.
So everyone else would get it wrong. No, I wrote like kind of I never published it, but it was like a self, kind of like my view of the world of every different type of. My view on politics and religion and relationships and like just kind of, and it was more catharsis, I think, than, but it was funny. It was like a funny, but also serious take on everything.
Which is what is your central guiding? What do you think?
Well, man, that's a vague question.
I don't think you would call it class, but if there's just a school of thought that you align closest with, what do you think it would be?
I enjoy Taoism a lot. if that makes any sense. Taoism is a Eastern philosophy, which has some similarities to Buddhism.
That's what I was thinking. I'd heard it before.
Yeah, the and also ties into what Bushido is based off of somewhat. Bushido is the code of the samurai. They have 9 tenets that they live off of, which are very simple, pragmatic. Although I've strayed from that to be less pragmatic, and I've been attempting to lead with my heart more than my mind recently. That's been a true desire of mine and change I want to see, because I've been very pragmatic and very like, this makes sense and da da da, and like I've been like, all right, I need to, and it works, there's nothing wrong with it, it works, but I'm like, all right, I need to be more lead with my heart and just kind of express that a little more. That's what I've been trying to do.
Yeah, I totally hear what you're saying. I think like I'm definitely like an emotional, like I think I'm following, I have thought my whole life that I've been leading with my heart.
Yeah.
But really, like I'm so hard on myself that I am like calculating every decision before I do it and after I do it to make sure that I am quote unquote good and right.
Yeah.
And until I'm just beating myself into a pulp, you know, and then I have to go back to the school of thought of nihilism and go, it doesn't matter, I'm gonna die.
Yeah.
And that makes me feel better.
It does. That is a good, like, at the end of the day you can just say that and be like, it's fine, it's whatever.
And I have to go, and this kind of aligns with like the Eastern philosophy with Buddhism, right? That there's no good and bad, there just is,
right?
And that's something like I had, like, which goes with the I'm gonna die thoughts I have to bring myself back to. But that's what I'm working on, is letting go of the calculating so much.
Yeah.
Because I don't need, not that I want to go be taking risky decisions all the time. I just want to like live and not be keeping track of myself constantly.
Yeah, well, I think there's a balance. And also what I've found is as you kind of lead with your heart and let the, you know, I don't know how holistic or hippie you want to get or are, but like, I feel like the universe just, things just work. The more you kind of like let go and just lead with your heart and do what you feel is right and what is kind of, although right is subjective, but it's kind of, I think we all kind of know the generalizations of what is, you know, the positive energy putting out there. I think it just kind of comes back and works. But, you know, also I think that maybe partly it's that positive energy that doesn't allow you to maybe perceive negative things as negative. Also, when you're putting out positive energy, the things that come back you that aren't as good, you just divert or handle them differently. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I think letting go and saying yes to the things that I didn't expect to say yes to, again, not in the, not in like a making decisions that are, God, I can't even think, just crazy out, just saying yes to, you know, the hardest drugs and everything like that.
Yeah.
But saying yes, like I never thought I was going to be a nanny. I received a message on care.com, which is where I was babysitting. And they were like, hey, we think you'd be a great fit because of your psychology background. Now I'm a nanny and I love it so much. And it is like just, and especially during a pandemic, even having a job and like having a job that has so much flexibility and like, we kind of have like our pod, like my pod is like this family, right? You've heard about this.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But like, I never thought I was going to be a nanny, and now I'm just really happy with where I am. I'm not going to be a nanny for the rest of my life. That's not my career decision, but I like where I am right now because I said yes to something that just let itself into my life.
Yeah. I mean, it's there for a reason. Why did something that wasn't even on your radar appear? And like, what an opportunity. Mm-hmm. I mean, worst case scenario, you try it, you hate it, and you go back to never doing nanny, being a nanny again.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. But it's like, no, I swore, cause I thought I was going to go into education, that if I did, it was going to be high schoolers.
Yeah.
Because I could actually have a conversation with them and not be just paid to wipe noses all day.
Sure.
But I think the fact that it's one kid definitely makes it a lot easier. And I didn't mean to, but when I was in school, the classes that opened themselves up to me because of what was available were child psychology classes. So now I know too much. I'm like, okay, I guess I'll use it.
You just got to do it. Yeah, I feel like that one-on-one can be interesting. You know, it's not just this mass. And also, I feel like with school, especially public schooling systems, it's just kind of, it almost becomes like a babysitting, warehousing. Like, we just want to, this is just facilitating a way to push these kids through to the next, you know. There's not as much opportunity for you to really affect change in individual kids' lives. Whereas a one-on-one situation, it's much, again, more intimate. You can really be a person with them and understand that kid and do some positive things.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's why, like, if I did education, I don't like any of the main subjects to learn them enough to go teach them. Yeah. So I was going to go do a school counseling, because you get that one-on-one more often.
Yeah.
But I mean, school counseling has become more like helping them figure out their schedules.
Yeah.
Than it has like actual counseling, but it's still like, I mean, the you have more opportunities for one-on-one and affecting change, right, in individuals than you do like just being completely overwhelmed by having 30 people in a classroom. I still don't know what I want to do is the answer to this question. And that's been the great thing about this pandemic, is like everybody's taking a step back and questioning the path for themselves.
Yeah.
And in a way that's overwhelming. And in a way I'm like, it's great. Comedy was really about, it was really going well. I had just moved to Seattle. I had started producing on one of the mics here at like a female queer mic. I was so excited about it.
Where was that at?
That's the Comedy Nest.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's like one. It's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
And I was asked to be on the production team like when I got down here pretty soon. And it just, again, the timing worked out that one of the producers was leaving and they thought I was cool. So I got to join, and then pandemic.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing, you know, that is one of the problems with this. Well, this is going to sound self-centered. One of the many myriad of problems with this pandemic.
Yes.
But in the comedy scope, I'm talking just comedy right now, people who were just getting to kind of that next level, because there's tiers and those tiers can be difficult to achieve. And when you kind of feel like, you know, you're getting some momentum, there's people who are getting that momentum to the next place, and all of a sudden it's like, okay, pause, and we have no idea when this is coming back. And when it does come back, basically there's going to be less of it, and mm-hmm. everyone is going to be knocked down a peg, essentially.
Yes.
So any momentum you had is gone, and where you were going to be is not where you're going to be when this opens back up.
Yeah. And you're going to be rusty. You're going to be rusty for a little bit. And that's why, like, when this started and people pretty quickly jumped onto Zoom comedy, and I didn't want to do it. I was so against it at the beginning. I was like, it's not the same. It's like, maybe this is a chance for me to rest and not even think about it and kind of take a step back. And I felt like there was like this school of thought of, if you're not doing the Zoom comedy, you're not actually dedicated to this, and so you're not good enough, and like you don't even belong here, so what are you doing anyway?
Yeah.
And I was like, I was trying not to listen to that. And then like a month ago, this comedian I know from Bellingham was like, okay, we're going to do a Zoom mic, but we're going to do it with the thought that it's benefiting the comedians. Like, we're just going to try to do our best after not doing comedy for X amount of months.
Yeah.
And just come as you are type situation. And now I've been doing that. I've probably done it like 4 times now, and I can feel chemicals in my brain again.
It's working.
It is. It was like, you know, I think I was afraid. I was writing it off because I was afraid that it was going to be awkward and I wasn't going to get laughs, and that meant, you know, I'm worthless and I'm not actually good if I can't get laughs over Zoom.
Yeah.
But that's, first of all, not what that means. And second, if you do the Zoom comedy in a certain way, you can get laughs.
Sure. Yeah.
It's very different, but like, I think what I've come to is like, okay, the goal isn't to have the biggest audience ever. The goal is to have a really attentive audience. So maybe that means every comic invites two people and you only have this amount of people. But I would rather have that than put the link out and
hope people drift in and out.
Hope people drift in and have to turn the mics off. Like, I want to hear their laughs. Yeah. That's the point. It's nothing without hearing their laughs.
Yeah, that's the kind of daunting part is when you can't hear anyone's laughs. And not because they're not laughing, but if you have the mics turned off and stuff, and it's a...
Or there's a lag, or right. Something happened on your end, and the punch right when the punchline was happening. It is not ideal, and I wouldn't say I like it. I do not prefer it to live theater, to live performance, mm-hmm. but it's something.
Yeah.
And I am, you know, I have figured out a way to get laughs.
So it's working. The Zoom is working for you.
Yeah, I just did one last night and I actually was so nervous because this is the thing, is the whole time your people can see you the whole show.
Yeah.
Because you're also an audience member. Whereas before I could sit in the back of the bar and be nervous and kind of practice whatever part I thought I was going to screw up, but I can't. So last night I was like, so I was nervous to try some new stuff and I muted myself and I sat like this, for listeners, I'm sitting with my hands in front of my mouth and like practiced my set. Cause I was nervous because I did this part where I like got up in the camera and was like yelling at the camera. And so it's been fun. It's been fun to mess with the restrictions of doing Zoom comedy. Like I did a joke where I was like, this next joke is kind of a stretch. And then I got back and I like stretched my calves. Everybody can see me stretching around, which will work when live comedy happens again. But it was more fun that I was sitting there in my PJ pants.
Right.
Like
stretching it. yeah, you get that physical comedy. Yeah, it does open up some other, if you can use it right, it does open up some parts that you know, you can't really do on stage even. So
yeah. Has it been going well for you?
You know, honestly, I kind of refuse to do Zoom mics.
I was there a month ago. I totally understand. I'm still half there. Okay, now you talk.
No, so at first I'm like, the first, I think, 6 weeks I was of quarantine, I was like, I love this break and I needed this break.
Yes.
I was going too hard. I was driving myself crazy. I was always on the run. I'm like, I needed this break. And then I started getting the itch and be like, oh, I need to do comedy again. But there was an opportunity. So I started, I started writing more. I started doing more podcast twice a week instead of once a week. I started doing, you know, this news show that I do once a week and like doing more writing and doing things like and doing more sketches and things I could do. I did a couple Zoom variety shows or game shows that were like improv style. We're interacting with the audience. So I'm like, that I'll do because I can work directly with the audience. And it's like, it's not me with like a green screen facade brick wall behind me holding a microphone that's attached to nothing in my yeah. living room talking to my dog. I'm like, that sounds terrible. Cause I watched a few of them. I'm like, ugh. And like the comedy club, you know, kept asking me to do them. And I'm like, no, no. Like they're doing Zoom shows. I'm like, I'm out. I did my first actual stand up Zoom show last week. Do you know who Monica Nevy is?
No.
Okay. She's a comic out of, she lives in like Tacoma or Seattle, Tacoma. I don't know where she is. I think Tacoma area now. Love her. She's one of the funniest people I know. She just released her first album last week.
Awesome.
She's been around forever. If you should definitely get to know her. She's in your area and she's amazing. She asked me to be on her release show that they did, you know, on her live stream. So I did that she's one of the few people I'm like, yes, anything for you. And it was fun. It was actually had fun. I'm like, oh, this is like, it went well. And there were like lots of laughs. And I mean, she's got a great audience and cultivates such a positive thing that, you know, I'm sure she's got a built in like super great audience. But I'm like, all right, maybe I should do some of these. I don't know. There's one place in Spokane that's gone rogue and does mics on every Tuesday anyway. I drop in there occasionally.
Oh, like in person?
In person.
Oh.
Yeah.
How was that?
It's okay.
What's the setup?
It's exactly what it was before COVID hit.
No.
But it's just a couple comics who go. It's always been that way. It's never been the best mic, but it's fine. So I'll go there every now and then and pop in, and I've got shows in Idaho and Montana occasionally now, so I can kind
of
get.
Of course you have shows in Idaho and Montana occasionally now.
Absolutely. Idaho, COVID never happened in Idaho. Those people that got freedom in Jesus, they got no COVID.
I think I heard that on one of your last episodes. You were driving with a comedian to Montana or something, right?
Oh, yeah. I think with Phil. Phil and I
right
went
before
to
the election.
Missoula. Yep. Yeah. Phil and I went to Missoula to do a show. So it's funny. I knew it was going to happen. It was only a matter of time, not if, but when. But I actually got COVID.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. I got it. I had that shit.
Oh my God.
And I knew it was going to happen. I knew it because I was still, even when, at like the height of the pandemic, I was still traveling. Like I flew to Vegas and then like hung out there and then drove to LA and like drove all the way up the coast and all these cities. And like,
why?
Because I wanted to photograph all the big cities empty.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I had an opportunity to see some friends in Vegas, and then my buddy down in Palm Springs wanted to drive back up. So I was like, all right, we'll come down. We'll spend a week in the desert, and then we'll just start moving up the coast and like take pictures of LA and San Francisco and go through Portland, like take, you know. I went to Denver to do some stuff and go to the Black Lives Matter rally that they're having down there when that was big. And
cool.
So I was like doing stuff and taking pictures and wanted to kind of see it all and document it all. Cause I'm like, this is like an unprecedented time. We'll never have an opportunity to, like, between the empty cities and the protests and whatnot. Like, I'm like, I have to, whatever, I'm going to go and do it. And then all through that, no problem. Made it. Lived. I mean, we're talking around multiple. I was in 10 states in 4 months in multiple airports in every biggest city on the West Coast. Made it. Then a month or two ago, I did a show. We had like 4 shows in a row in Idaho and Montana. And I don't know where it was, but they were all sold out. So 100 people or so at each show.
No!
And I came back and a couple days later. Yeah, there I started getting a cough. Then I woke up one day and had the worst like body aches of my life for 2 days.
No.
And around day 5, when I woke up and I was eating breakfast, I was having like coffee and eggs and chorizo and hot sauce and like just mowing it down. Couldn't taste any of it. And I'm like, oh,
no.
And then that's when I knew. And I'm like, I got it. So I went and got tested. They're like, yeah, you got it. And but honestly, like I was fine. Like that, the worst was that I had bad body aches for 2 days, and that was the only part that really was bad.
Right. Well, for you it was fine.
Right. For me it was fine. Yeah. It's funny because I've known people who it hit hard, and some people they're like, even after they got tested positive because they worked at like a bar or restaurant, like I tested, I'm positive,
they didn't
but
even
like,
know they had
like
it.
I still wouldn't. So it's so. I never had a fever any day. I was testing myself and never had a fever.
Yeah. See, so that's the part that scares me is like, you don't have to have, these are not like, I don't know, mutually exclusive. Is that something you could say?
Yeah.
I don't know.
The symptoms are certainly not consistent.
Yeah. Like you could just have body aches and not have a fever and. Like you should, but yeah, that's the thing is like, it's like Russian roulette. Like you don't know if you're going to be having, you know, the worst case ever and have to have transplants down the road or die. My dad just had it and he is fine.
Yeah.
Well, this is the thing is my dad has MS.
Oh, wow.
So he already had like autoimmune stuff happening.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And then this triggered like a bunch of his MS symptoms. So that's the thing. He's like, he was pretty much fine with COVID. It was uncomfortable. But now his MS is like super triggered.
Yeah. Is he doing okay though?
Yeah. 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 He's doing okay. He mostly just said he's like really tired. It's hard for him to like walk long distances or even short distances, which is like the number one symptom of MS is fatigue. So
yeah. How long ago did he have it?
COVID?
Yeah.
Probably like 3 weeks ago.
Okay, so yeah.
And he was in Texas.
Oh, yeah, Texas is pretty open too.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I have about like 7 minutes before I have to go get ready for work.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot. Yeah, I was just,
no, it's all good.
Just chatting away here. So let me ask you, I got a couple. So I do want to ask you this because this is how, why I had you on. Why we hit record. You told me off the air, and I told you I want to talk about on the air, that you made a list of best reasons to poop. What was it?
It was the reasons I love a good poop.
Okay, yeah.
And I wrote this because I started the podcast during the pandemic because I, too, was getting that itch that I needed to have social, like, extroverted energy. Yeah.
And that's called Gift of Gab. That's your podcast.
Yes, my podcast is Gift of Gab. And so I wrote this. I just was having a good poo one morning and wrote this list of reasons I love. Not while I was having the poo. I wrote it later.
That's the best time to do it, though, really. It's on your mind. You're there.
Yes, like, exactly. Well, it's funny because my inspiration for writing and when I have a good poo kind of coincide because it's right after I drink coffee.
Sure. I get that. Listen, I am 100% on board with what you're saying so far.
Yes. Same. So I wrote this list of reasons I love good poo for my podcast. And then actually I did a Zoom mic a couple weeks ago and didn't have any material. So I just read this list and it went pretty well. But I can get the list if you want me to get the list.
Would you be so kind? Okay, perfect.
Yeah, I'd be so kind.
All right.
Okay, wait. I have so many things in. I'll start a journal for one reason, and then it has six other things in it. So I have like some podcast stuff in here, and then just myriad of things. Sometimes I'm like, oh man, I'm so stupid. Like, people should not want to talk to me. And then I say words like myriad, and I'm like, oh wow, I am actually a genius.
Everyone should listen to me. I'm a fucking genius.
You know what? I should get a podcast.
Where can people find your podcast, Gift of Gab? And how often does it come
podcast,
out?
I try to do it like bi-weekly. I know that the thing that makes it is that I do it consistently, but they can find it on Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcast, anywhere you can find it.
Okay, podcasts. And I'll put a link in this in the comments, in the description of this show, too, for everyone who wants to and should listen to it.
Yay, thank you. It's definitely a mixture of, it's called Gift of Gab because I was spending so long like trying to find a focus, and then I was like, you know what, I have to create something, and you know what the central theme is that I want to talk. That's all I want to do. So I'm going to call it Gift of Gab. And it's really a mixture of like my background, which is in theater, psychology, comedy. This is one thing that I talk about on there is that I had the amazing opportunity in college to be studying psychology and theater at the same time, as well as going to therapy. So I was having like this mind heart explosion the whole time. Oh my God. I have never faced my childhood trauma so hard in my life.
That's good. Well, at least you faced them and that's the way to do it. You got to hit and tackle them.
Yep. And now I'm done. I've done it. It's accomplished. It's over. I never have to face it again.
No more therapy?
No, I just had therapy yesterday.
Okay. I was going to say.
I was just joking that it's you just do it and then it's over. It's not a lifelong. No, it's totally a lifelong.
Yeah, there's always more.
Unfortunately. Unfortunately.
Yeah, childhood trauma is like steak fries at Red Robin. There's always more. Sometimes you don't even got to ask for it. They just bring you another basket of that shit.
Oh, my God. That's great. Have you used that? Or did you just come up with that?
That's just off the top of my head.
You got to write that down.
Okay.
So here's... This is the thing. The reasons I love a good poo. First, you have to define what is a good poo and what is a bad poo. So
okay.
A good poo, there is no effort. It is, and you're completely empty after. You mm-hmm. feel like you've accomplished it.
Yeah.
A bad poo is when there's a lot of effort or discomfort and you do not feel like it's finished. Yeah. Okay. So the first, I didn't number these, but I'm going to do my best. The first reason, I love a good poo, and it's in the definition, but I feel empty after. I feel light.
Yeah.
And I feel like a fresh feeling of starting anew, especially if the poo is in the morning mm-hmm. and I can like go into my day.
Sure.
Just fresh and ready. Reason number two, sometimes I'm so empty that I'm hungry again, so I get to refill. I wrote yes.
What's your favorite thing to refill with after a good poo?
I mean, more coffee definitely, but okay. cereal. Because okay. this is the thing is I can't just have cereal for breakfast because it's not filling, but I love cereal. So if I have my filling breakfast and then I poo and then I get to have cereal.
Damn.
Day,
yeah, that's
day made.
Just go back to bed at that point. It's not gonna get better.
Yeah, exactly. Number three, again, no effort. It's ready to go. A quick poo in and out of there.
Yeah.
It's almost like you only peed.
Right.
Because, like, it was so fast.
Yeah, did I even do that? Did that happen? Did I Mandela effect a poop? Like, what is that real?
What does that mean?
Mandela effect?
Yeah.
Oh, man. You're going to, do you know who Nelson Mandela is?
Yeah.
He died in, like, I don't know, 2012 or something like that. But a lot of people remember him dying in prison in, like, 1990. Because he was in prison during apartheid in Africa. He was an imprisoned, like, president. And a lot of people remember him dying. And there's this whole thing that's called the Mandela effect of, like, false memories in this reality. And there's a whole bunch of them. And the funny thing is, if you go through a list of them, I remember everything because I remember Nelson Mandela dying in prison. I remember it that way because I didn't talk to my mom much growing up. But I remember one time we were watching the news and I saw it and I asked her about it because I knew who he was kind of tangentially because I knew he was important. And I'd heard his name,
right.
And I asked her about it. And I was like inquisitive and asking her questions about what happened. But there's a bunch of other stuff that, like, have you ever heard of the movie Kazam with Shaquille O'Neal did this movie in like 1996 where he's a genie and things like that. So
the memory that didn't happen is that the movie existed?
Well, that movie exists, but a couple of years before that, a movie called Shazam came out and it starred Sinbad as a genie. In this reality now, that movie never happened. But I remember that movie. I have friends who remember that movie. And because I remember when Kazam came out, I'm like, that's just like Shazam. It's another like popular black guy being a genie.
And then they were like, no, that didn't happen.
And there's no record of it. There's no movie. Sinbad said it never happened. There's no copies of it anywhere.
Now there is other people besides you who have said that this happened.
Hundreds of thousands.
With Sinbad.
Yes. So many people. I'll send you a list of them. There's a whole thing of them. But
The point is that my poop was a Mandela effect.
Yes.
That it is on that list.
Did it happen or not?
That-
I remember it happening, but do you? I don't know.
did I poop?
It's one of those things like in this reality, the prevailing theory is that in, I think, Sweden, one of the countries smarter than us, there's a place called CERN, CERN. It's in it's this underground atom smasher that they've been playing with for years. And the prevailing theory is that I think the last time they used it was 2014, 2012, something like that. They were smashing atoms and creating dark matter, and they think that when they activated it, there was a shift in our reality because of the way they're fucking with dark matter and atoms. Like
what the fuck?
And like they think that it's just this slight shift in our reality where it just
where Shazam did not happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
I'll send you an interesting article about it.
Definitely, that's some. Mind control, what is that called?
MK Ultra.
MK Ultra. That's some freaky shit. Yeah. I don't like thinking about this stuff. It freaks me out.
Oh, I just finished a book called Chaos by Tom O'Neill. It's all about MK Ultra, the CIA, and Charles Manson. It's like a 450-page book. No, not to brag. that's crazy. It was a crazy book too. So that,
wow.
Yeah.
No, it's all very interesting. It scares me. Okay.
Sorry. Yeah. Poops.
All good. Reason number four. Usually the poo is full, solid, and I feel proud of my work. Mm. I'm proud of my body.
Yeah.
Five. One thing off my checklist for the day. six. It feels good coming out. A fully relaxed lower half. I feel, and this is a side note. I feel that sitting to pee is superior to standing because I can pee and poop at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You, a person who stands to pee could try to do that, but they would need to clean it up.
Sure. Most likely there's going to be collateral damage.
Yes, definitely. I don't know what number I'm on, but it provokes stretching and deep cleansing breaths. I don't know about that one, but it's on there.
I think it is.
And this is my favorite, but not the last. My hemorrhoids get a good massage.
Yes, which is important. It helps. It does make,
yes,
yeah,
it does.
feels good at the time.
And then it says that my butthole feels pleased at least 3 hours after.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
You know that? You know that feeling like the rest of the morning where you're like, wow, mm-hmm. I remember that poop in my body.
Yeah. You know, that's a real thing. I forget what it's called, but there is a thing that actually activates and happens in your body when you have a bowel movement that actually releases like not serotonin, like, but happy chemicals that actually make you feel good and relieved. It's a real thing.
Makes sense because I was listening to some sex podcast that was talking about anal play, and it was mm-hmm. saying like there's a reason that you do feel pleasure when you poop because there's stuff going on there.
Yeah.
Also, another interesting fact about poop, people who have periods tend to need to poop more when they're on their period.
Uh-huh.
It's because the same chemical that releases the uterine lining
uh-huh.
releases your bowels.
Interesting.
Or something like that.
Something to that effect. Good.
Yes.
That's interesting to know. All right. Well,
yeah, I thought you would be interested in that.
that is an interesting fact. I wish I had uterine lining then because I need to poop and can't.
There you go. Eat a banana. This is my theory about the banana. It's not the potassium. It's the shape of the banana just pushing everything down.
Yeah, it's just like a
full line.
Yeah, it's just a plunger, just pushing it. Just there it goes.
More like a snake.
Yeah,
really.
That's more accurate. Just there it goes. Just push one side in and out the other side. Like a little meat grinder, like a little sausage maker. Just
yes. This is why people introduce me as sweet, but you won't believe what comes out of her mouth.
Yeah, they could just use your name.
I don't get it.
Yeah. Instead of the whole qualifying.
Oh, they could just use my. Yeah, they could just say my name.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to do this thing where I actually say when I don't get a joke or know a word.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I'm just like we talked about before we started recording. I'm just smiling and laughing out of obligation and because I'm uncomfortable instead of actually saying what I think. So now I do that.
That's good. Your willingness to learn. That's a good thing.
Yeah. There we go.
Well, Andrea, tell people where they can find you, follow you, the podcast, you, et cetera, before we mm-hmm. get out of here.
So the podcast, yeah, Gift of Gab on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor. And then my Twitter is @AndreaEntz. The @ is the A. And then Instagram @AndreaEntz. I think that's all my social media.
Okay. Well, yeah. we'll put tags there so you guys can find it. Andrea, thank you very much for doing this. Let's do this again soon. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I feel like I have so much more we could talk about.
Definitely. I love talking to you. It was great to see you
again.
Yeah.
Good to see you too. I'm glad you're doing well. And I'll send you that Mandela Effect link. Then check it
great.
Out. All right.
Great.
All right. Good to see you. And I will talk to you soon. Yeah.